Great. Well, thanks everybody for joining us. This is already our second call for PM 101 Promoting Recreation, second and last. And I'd like to acknowledge that I'm hosting it from the traditional territory of the Fallon-Dunn First Nation and Tahn Watching Council in the White Horse area of the Yukon. So thanks for joining us. And for those of you that are in the chat room, I think right now it's just Kelsey and I. Justine, your computer might have dropped the chat there, but that's okay. No worries, because Amy's not in there either. So we'll follow a similar sort of pattern or agenda for our call. We'll do some introductions, and then we'll chat about some of the different topics for this week. And then I have a challenge for you at the end of the week where I kind of pick your brains a little bit. So that's sort of the gist of today's call. Before we get into introductions, I just wanted to remind you that on last week's call, we talked about the first three of six steps of a promotional activity. So we talked about the why, the what, and the who. And we really emphasized that we need to both inform and motivate. And we'll cover that again this week, because I think that's a really important part of promoting recreation. Hopefully, if you hadn't watched it last week, you've had time to watch Simon Sinek's TED Talk, where he explains the reasons why, or the reasons that why is much more compelling to make people act than the telling them the what. So that's really important for us in recreation, because we're benefiting, or we're marketing the benefits of recreation, not just the recreation activities that we do. So we'll do a quick round of introductions just to hear each other's voices, and I think thanks, we've got a fairly small group, so you get to know each other fairly quickly. And then I'll cover a little bit of the content, and then as I mentioned, I'm going to be asking you to share your ideas. And what I'm going to ask you about is your ideas about good practices for social media in small and remote communities. And last year when I ran this course, we came up with sort of a bit of a cheat sheet, like ways, things that you might want to keep in mind when you're doing social media in your small and remote communities. So hopefully that will be a helpful conversation for you today. So let's go do a quick round of introductions, and I listed everybody's name by community alphabetical order, which would put Megan first from Iqaluit, and then Justine in Bechico, and then Stacy up in Tuck, and then Amy, and then Kelsey in Whitehorse. So it'll go Justine, and then Amy and Kelsey, and then I'll just rotate it around each time. So that's our circle. So what I'm wondering if you could do for your introduction, and I'm going to put this into the chat so that you have a minute, and I'll also say it slow enough because I do have two questions. So introduction is just your name, your community, and your role, just to remind those of us who are just getting to know each other. And then what I'd like you to do is tell us the number one or the best tool for promotion in your community. So if you could only use one tool, like you could only use posters, you could only use the radio, you could only use Facebook, what would that tool be and why? And to not put Justine right on the spot right now, and to give you a minute to think about your answer, Justine, I'll give you an example. And then we'll go to Justine, and then Amy, and then Kelsey. So as you guys know, I'm Caroline, and I'm the learning consultant and trainer for the Recreation North Training Program, and I live just outside of Whitehorse. So I find that the number one promotional tool for a city as big as Whitehorse or even as Yellowknife is difficult to answer. So I'm going to choose the fact that I lived in Watson Lake for 11 years, which is a small community, and I think you know, Kelsey, I know you've lived in a small community too, and Justine, you as well. So you'll be able to think it through that way, and Amy might have to sort of imagine what it might be like in a smaller community. But for me, in Watson Lake, when I lived there, and probably now still too, the best tool was always word of mouth. Might not have worked so well during the last year and a half of the pandemic, but I found that if people are excited or interested in something, they always want to tell something else. So if you tell a couple of the right people, like in Watson Lake, that was Jenny Skelton, if you know her, Kelsey, you tell the right person and everybody else knows about it. So that's my introduction. So Justine, I'd like to invite you to introduce yourself and tell us about the best tool for promotion in your community.
Okay. Hi, my name is Christine Harrison. I am from Mexico. And at the moment, I am working with Cuito Government. I am the executive assistant for client services. I was the coordinator for Mexico over the summer. However, I just decided to take a break for my mental state. But for promotion, I believe, well, right now I help with like the Cuito website and the Facebook page. So we do like, advertising for job ads and everything like that. We also share a lot of, Q&A for COVID and just all the, programs that other departments have been, doing. So like, we will get some articles and I would just our time. So I believe right now, our best tool is, social media. We just post it on Facebook and our website and, how it grabs a lot of people's attention and they share it and they talk to, like, the elders at home for those that are living with them. And we usually get input, through messages and the community.
Thanks, Justine. I was getting a bit of cutting in or out. Kelsey and Amy, were you hearing sort of Justine cutting in and out, or is that my line?
It was cutting in and out for me,
yeah. Okay. I mean, I heard most of it. There was just the odd word that I missed. So thanks for sharing that, Justine. It sounds like social media is a really good promotional tool for your community. And, you know, I can understand why. So thank you for sharing that. So let's go over to Amy. Do you want me to repeat the question?
Sure. Thanks.
Okay. So introduce yourself. I just said your name. you can say your community and role. And then tell us what the number one or best promotional tool is for your community. So if you could only use one thing to do promotions, what would it be and why?
I'm Amy. I'm the program coordinator at Elder Active in Whitehorse. I think the best one for us is the newsletter that we send out. Just it has, we have tracker, like analytics, I guess, on our mail out, so we can see when people open them, and they open them like 6 a.m. Saturday morning when it gets sent out. People open them and read them, and we always get feedback. I think some of the shortcomings of that are, number one, we're only advertising to people who already know about us and want to know what we're doing, and number two, there are some people who don't have email. There was a lady who came in yesterday and wanted all of the previous newsletters printed out for her so that she could read them. She doesn't have email, and sort of the downside of that is most of the time the newsletters are talking about deadline and date specific things. So I was like, well, all this information is kind of useless to you now. Like, if you want to know about what did happen, I can print them off for you. But yeah, I think we need like a phone tree, or we had been talking about a phone tree or something like that, having a volunteer call out to members and people who don't have email addresses to inform them of stuff that's coming up.
Yeah, that's definitely a challenge. So you're reaching the people you're already reaching, but other mm-hmm. people that are interested don't know how to find out about it or where to go. So,
yeah.
And I don't know if for, you know, in your new offices there, if there's space for like a public members only computer that people can come if they don't have email, for example, to come and look at mm-hmm. it or something like that.
That'd be a good point.
Yeah, just one that they can come and sit down and read and register or whatever. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks for introducing yourself. Over to you, Kelsey. You might want to put your hat from growing up in Teslin on, or you can use a White Horse hat, whichever you prefer. But what's the best tool for promotion? If you could only use one, what would it be?
So I'm Kelsey. I live in Whitehorse, and I'm the active living coordinator for RK. For RP, I would say our best promotional tool would be the quarterly large newsletter that we send out. We seem to get the best and the most response from the information that is in that newsletter. We do send out a smaller one every month, but it seems like the quarterly large one actually gets the most views and the most response. When I was in Tesla, I would say that the best promotional tool we had was posters. We would post them at kind of the key locations, so the TTC band office, the post office, the store, the motel, and the DOT office, and then you would get a lot of feedback from those posters because they were in the spots that everyone went to every day, so they saw them.
Yeah, it's interesting how depending on your community, and when you talk about the RPA community, you're talking about people across the whole Yukon territory. So, you know, that's very different than a small community. And I imagine, Justine, when you're, if you're working for the Tiltshot government, that you're, or the Kutchot, sorry, I didn't say that right, you're targeting people that are in your community, but also maybe a little further out too. So, you know, the tools that you choose have to really reach the people where you want to reach and serve the purpose that you want them to do. So thanks for sharing those in your introduction. That's interesting. I just want to pause for a moment and ask if either Stacy or Megan joined the call, and I'm just not aware of that. Okay, so we'll keep going then. Thanks everybody for sharing. I'd like to just touch on some of the content for this week, for week two. If you happen to have the PowerPoint open, we're going to be looking at the slides from 20 to 25. But if not, I'll just do an explanation and you can go back and look at them later. So last week we talked about figuring out the purpose or the why for your promotions, identifying what you're going to promote and to whom. So now you have to, this week we're going to talk about taking those ideas and putting them into action. So in order to do that, you want to figure out the how, the when, and the where, and that's captured on slide number 20. And there's a number of questions under each one of those. So, you know, how will you create promotional materials? Where will they appear? You know, you just talked about posters, Kelsey, and where you would put them. So there's quite a bit to consider from developing it and figuring out what your ideas are and then putting those ideas into action. And that's all part of promoting recreation. So what you want to do, as slide 21 summarizes, is you want to begin with sort of preparing or packaging your promotional materials. And this involves some really big things too, things like branding, what the messaging is, and what tools you will use. So will you use social media, a website, a door-to-door chat with elders? Like, how do you use that? So there's all these, this how is a pretty big part, and this is probably where most of us sort of get stuck, I would think. Or maybe, you know, we can think of it in one way, but, you know, trying it a different way might help a little bit better. So slides 22 and 23 give you some information on how to shape your key messages and to make sure that your messages inform, this is on slide 22, and make sure that they motivate, which is on slide 23. So this week's RLA, or required learning activity, asks you to create something that does both of these things, inform and motivate. If you scroll to slide 24, there's some information about branding. And I think everybody's really familiar with branding, so I didn't get into a lot of detail on it, but it is really important because branding is your organization's or your business's personality. So it's kind of like, you know, I choose to wear black pants a lot of the time, and that maybe says something about who I am, I don't know, or I like sweats and rain shoes. That might be my branding when I put those things on, whether or not I wear makeup or do my hair a certain way. So I think, you know, that's my look and feel, but each organization has its own look and feel. And I've got some of the branding that RPAM, the Recreation Parks Association of Nunavut, has on their materials, and there's lots of color, and the color shows movement. So that's, you know, part of what, how they've branded themselves. So branding is really tough. It can be hard, but once you nail it, keep it going. It helps people feel like they belong. It focuses what you're doing, and it really gets you recognized. After a while, people start to recognize it. So I do have a quick question I'm going to ask you. It's just a yes or no or I don't know answer. I'll pop it in the chat for Kelsey, and then I'll ask it. And this time we won't put Justine on the spot. I'll go Amy, Kelsey, Justine this time. We'll just keep rotating that way around. So my quick question for you with a yes, no, or I don't know answer is, does your group or organization have its own distinct brand that shows through in all your promotional activities? Yes, no, or I don't know. Amy, how about Elder Active?
Kind of. We've actually just been talking about this. So the, yeah, maybe a longer answer, but kind of.
That's fine to hear that, kind of. And, you know, maybe this will help.
Yeah.
Sure. Excellent. Kelsey, how about our case? Do you feel like yes, no, I don't know, or kind of? I'll have to add that as an answer, as an option.
We do, and we're in the process of sorting out what that looks like for social media.
Yeah, it takes quite a bit to figure it out, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And some of our page branding's changed. When they had the same logo for almost 20 years, and then there's sort of been changes, and I don't think they've quite nailed what it looks like now. So, challenges.
Yeah, it's still a process.
Yeah. And different people have different ideas, too, so that makes it hard as well.
Mm-hmm.
Justine, you can answer from either from when you were working in recreation or from your perspective with the Clicquot government. Do you feel like you have distinct branding that's portrayed in any promotional activities? Yes, kind of, no, or I don't know.
With recreation right now, I really don't know at the moment, but when I did work in recreation, I tried to make sure that we had specific postings for specific groups, and so that's the topic of the group.
Yeah, so that sort of look and feel, so that it would be consistent, so people would know what they were looking at?
Yeah.
Great, well, thanks. And I think, you know, like sometimes people think about it, and sometimes people think that branding is a logo, and sometimes they know it's colors or designed, but I think it's even more, it comes right down to things like, you know, how you choose to answer the phone even. To me, that is branding as well. So slide 25 explains that you really want to choose a style that reflects what you do. So I found the Arcan style was lots of fun. You've got to make sure that everybody who's involved with you, your staff and volunteers, knows what your brand up is. Otherwise, it's hard to expect them to follow it, too. And then you want to brand your promotional materials if you have some in the same way. So that's a little bit about branding. Let's consider next, then, how we use tools to promote recreation. So to me, a word tool is something, it helps us do something. So on slide 26, I have a picture of a hammer or something like that I found. So if you imagine that a hammer helps you put a nail into the board. So in promotion, we're choosing a tool, something to help us get the message out to our audience. And there's lots of different tools that you can use for promotion. On slide 27, and also if you did activity number 4, you would have seen the list that I started, but I'm sure you guys could add many extra things to this list. When I looked at them, I wanted to come up with 2 different categories, and I came up with sort of the tried and tested tools. And these are the ones that don't rely on technology and that we've probably been using for quite a long time, and before the advent of internet. And then I've got the technology-based tools that have come up since we've had internet, things like websites that, you know, Justine, you mentioned that, and Facebook and social media, things like that. So if you haven't had a chance to explore the promotional tools in Activity 4, I encourage you to take a look at Activity 4 before you get into doing this week's required learning activity. What you want to do then is, once you've chosen your tool or tools, you want to make sure that you know your who your audience or target group and are and what messages you want to share with them. So you should have figured that out when you sort of shaped your ideas, but you want to confirm or clarify it. Then you're going to have to figure out location, which is where. So, and also when, because timing is really important. So Amy, you just explained that 6 a.m. Saturday morning, really good time to put things in the email inboxes of elders and seniors. So that's a super important thing to know about the when, and the email is the where. So really important to figure those bits out too, because they can make a difference in how successful your promotional efforts are. So what I'd like to do now is I'd like to take some time for us to explore what we think are good practices for social media in our all remote and northern communities, and also with the target audiences that you sort of deal with. So we're going to have a couple of round circles, because there's just four of us on the call. We'll go around a few different times, because each time you listen to what someone says, it might generate another idea for you. So kind of like a popcorn or a rapid fire type thing, where you share an idea, the next person shares an idea, then somebody else agrees or shares a new idea, and we'll go around a few times until we get tired of doing that. So what my question is then is, as I mentioned at the beginning of the call, I thought if we created a tip sheet or something that's similar like that, that it might be interesting to us and also to other people who work in recreation and are responsible for promotions. So what I'm going to ask you to do is, in 30 seconds or less, and again, we'll go around a couple of times, so the timing isn't quite as important, but please share one or two things at a time that are good, that you think are good practices or a good practice for social media in your community. And so I just see Kelsey in the chat. So Kelsey, you can also pop ideas in the chat, but we'll go around and I'll write them down. And then what I'll do is I'll create a tip sheet and share it back with you. So let's start with Kelsey. We'll go Kelsey, Justine, Amy, and we'll go around a couple of times. So you just one thing at a time. So Kelsey, what's something that's an example, or what's one good practice that you should do with regards to social media, or that you would recommend if somebody asked you?
We found that posting 2 to 3 times a week on our social media worked best. We went from posting 5 days a week to now posting 2 to 3, and we're getting a lot more engagement on our posts now that we are posting 2 to 3 times a week.
That's good to know. So do you think, why do you think that is? Why do you think 2 to 3 times as compared to 5 times a week?
Because we're able to focus our posts a lot more. So instead of trying to figure out something to post every day, we're able to cater our messages a lot more because we're able to put more time and thought into them. So people are getting more out of what we're posting.
Awesome. That's great. That's a good practice. That's something for people to think about. And obviously, if people don't have the resources or the people, staff people responsible for social media, even 2 to 3 times a week might be challenging, right? So maybe less than that. But I think your message is, don't overdo it.
Yeah, and I think really what it boils down to is, if you're posting things that are super catered and really fit with your organization, then that's when you're going to get the most payoff. So even if you can't post 2 to 3 times a week, if you're making sure that every time you post it's something that is a well-catered message, you're going to get a lot of good feedback on it.
Awesome. Thank you. Justine, now what's something that you think is a good practice, and it can be from any of your experience or even yourself personally, what's a good practice for social media in, you know, our small and remote and northern communities?
I think it's mainly having a blue with just uploading people at a blue. Usually for our crypto page right now, we have a lot of the engagements going on. And so I can actually see on the Facebook page because it like says like how many people see a day or what are the best days. And I believe that Fridays, Wednesdays, and I think it was Sundays were the highest days that we got more people to see our page and was able to update themselves on what is going on in the community and what we are planning to do during this COVID pandemic and the containment orders and everything like that.
Well, that's good. So then what you're suggesting a good practice is to look at your analytics and see what it's telling you and then reinforce where your high points are, where you're, you know, where most people are hitting your site.
Yeah. And so when that happens, we usually try to post more on those days just so we have more people looking at it and they're aware of, like, the day before. Like, on Sundays, they usually check on Sundays so that they know if they, if they're going to work or not the next day or if the kids are going to school or not the next day, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, so Sunday they might be looking for different information than on Wednesday or Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a good point. And when you understand that, then you can tailor your information to what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, Facebook does its own little things in the background, and when you look for something, it tends to put that in your face a little bit more. So I think it works for both sides, for you as an organization or government, but also for individuals, too. Thanks, Justine. Amy, how about yourself? What do you think are some good practices for social media in our small, rural, and northern communities?
Sure, we don't really, because social media isn't like one of the huge ways that our membership connects, I don't think. We don't have, like, we don't use Twitter and we don't use Instagram and we have a Facebook page, but it doesn't get a ton of action. So I'm not really sure. We don't do a lot with social media.
So from a personal perspective, from living in the North, what works for you? Like, you know, if you use social media for looking for things, do you do like what Justine does? Do you go to certain, or what Justine explained that people will look for certain things on a certain day of the week? Would you agree with that? Or do you sort of see things that some organizations do or some posts do and other posts don't that resonate a bit better with you?
I also work as a journalist, like a freelance journalist, and I use social media a lot for that. And definitely there's like times of day. Yeah, like if you post something, this is maybe some insight into how people work or do not work at their regular jobs, but if you're posting something sort of at 9 o'clock, at lunch or like in the later afternoon, it gets way more reaction, I find, than other times of day, because I think people get to work and immediately get on all their social media to check out what's happening, and then same thing with breaks in the afternoon when they're sick of working. And then after 5, it usually drops off, and on the weekends as well.
This sounds pretty interesting. The interesting to see who those people are. Are they government employees?
No comment.
Yeah, it's probably not me because I'm self-employed, but anyway.
Yeah.
That's some good insight. Let's go back around our circle. So, Kelsey, I'm going to come back to you. Do you have another thing that you think is a good practice for social media? If we talk a lot about posting and timing, do you have any other things that you pay attention to or do?
We've been looking a lot at who our audience is on Facebook, so we are kind of diving deeper into our analytics to see who is it that's actually following us and who is it that's actually interacting with our posts, both to see if we can engage those people more, but also to try to figure out how to engage the people that we're not getting. So we have found largely that our audience is females who are between the ages of 25 and 40. So we're kind of trying to figure out how to get the people that don't fit into that very, very narrow range.
That's super interesting. How do you, like, through analytics, how do you find out that they're females age 25 to 40? Do you ask them, or is that something Facebook's telling you because it's collected that information?
Yeah, it's something that Facebook is telling us, which I do want to figure out how to dive deeper into, because there's a lot of organizations that follow us on Facebook and Instagram, so I would like to know how they determine if those are male or female. But it's based right now just off of what Facebook and Instagram will tell us.
Yeah, so for me, you put in the wrong date of birth in my Facebook profile because I never give the right date of my birth on anything online unless it's government stuff. It might have captured me in that, even though I'm not under the age of 40.
Yeah, it
does. That's interesting. So it's good practice to try and understand who your audience is so that you know who you're reaching, but how, trying to figure out how to reach others as well.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. Justine, can you think of any other good practices? We've talked a lot about posting and those sorts of things. Is there anything about the nature of those posts, like you've shared about the information, but is there, you know, if there's any colors or special wording or images that, you know, are good to include because people relate to them better?
Right now what we're doing is we use a template for different communities, for all four communities that we have in Creature Region, and so it's specific for, like, for example, Veshiko is blue, Gamati is green, Lakwati is orange, and Wati would be like pink or something like that. And so we have those specific colors for specific communities, but we don't have it for what kind of departments and stuff like that. So right now we're trying to figure that out. We're also in the middle of trying to get someone for communication so that I'm not doing the ones who's doing all the postings and everything like that.
Yeah, that can end up being a lot of work, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I love that idea, though, of coding the communities, especially right now with COVID, where people are looking for notices about the, you know, what's going on in their specific community, because once you start to know that, you know, if I live in Wati, I'm looking for the, I think you said it was yellow there, then I'm going to be looking for that color because I know then it has more meaning for me. So that's a really interesting way, and I wonder if there's ways for, like, Elder Active or Arte, for Kelsey or Amy, to think of colors for coding for programs, for example, right? Like, you know, do you have a color for blue as in winter, or, you know, is there a vibrant color for Team UConn at the Canada 55 games or stuff like that. So I think that's a cool idea. I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah, and I also like the idea of what the girls have said about, like, newsletters being sent out to those that are in the community for, like, the elders and everything like that. And I feel like maybe we can do that as well.
Yeah, so you're not just expecting people to have, you know, like a smartphone or a computer with social media.
Yeah,
that
for those, yeah.
Share that.
For those that don't
yeah.
have internet, or for those that don't have access to social media or anything like that, it would be great to do that, especially for the elders.
Yeah, and, you know, they might not trust social media too, right? They didn't grow up with internet or things popping up at you that, like, how does somebody know that I like moose, right? So, sorry, I follow the Arctic Kitchen on Facebook, and I keep getting these pictures of amazing meals that people have cooked. I'm like, oh, that's not fair. But
I also help with like the Creature Online store, and so like what was I gonna say? I totally forgot, it slipped my mind. But we usually have products off of elders, but they don't know how to make invoices, so we have to make the invoices for them, and they sign it and stuff like that. So they probably just don't know how to work electronics, basically.
Yeah, and it's not fair to expect them to either. So, you know, you kind of are building a stronger community when you can connect them to one way that people are communicating on social media, but you can connect them to a person and other things so that they still feel like they're part of that and they don't feel left out. So I really like that suggestion. Amy, coming back to you, can you think of anything else that are good practices, whether it's with Elder Active or from any other perspective that you bring?
I don't know. I mean, this is maybe not something that I've necessarily done, but I can't remember who just said this, but yeah, not overwhelming. I know that I typically will. If somebody's posting more than once a day, I'm like, unfollow, that's too much. So kind of trying to find that balance between giving people information and like being at the top of their mind, but also not overwhelming them with stuff, because that's too much as well.
Yeah. I like, personally, I find I use Facebook for organizations and groups, and I, although I have personal friends on there, I don't necessarily follow their posts. It's a good thing. Don't tell anybody that, but, you know, I don't need to know that so-and-so had toast for breakfast or something like that, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's making it meaningful and relevant, so. Last year when we did this conference call, I'll just share with you, and I'll post it for you afterwards, what we came up with. We came up with an acronym, which is CRISP, like, you know, the crisp winter days, or crisp and clear. So each letter stands for something. So C stands for clean and colorful. So using bright colors, like, Justine, you were just talking about ones. And keeping it clean, as in deleting old posts that aren't, you know, like had a date on them and it's not relevant anymore. R stands for regular and regulated. That kind of sounds like bodily functions, but it's supposed to be about your social media. So post regularly on the same day. So you've all sort of expressed that. And then the other piece that we talked about last year is the regulation of comments. So do you use comments to allow them, or you monitor them before they actually show up? I in CRISP stands for interesting, so share successes or try both group pages for special interest groups. S stands for simple and short, so use plain language, and then also using local language as well, I think is really important. Justine, do you guys have to translate any of your social media?
We do try to do, like, slide cards and whatnot, during, like, special days, such as Mother's Day, Father's Day, Easter, and all that. We usually have a translator that would come in once a month, and we would record her, and she would just basically, say what that, like, for example, she would say, tea. And she would say tea a couple times, and then she would say it in Creecho, and it would be Lippy in Creecho. And so she would say that a couple times, and then after that, we would make a video, and we would post it on the Creecho website and on the Facebook.
Oh, that's great.
And a lot of people share it.
That's a nice way to help people learn or relearn their language too, so that's a great idea. Thank you. Go ahead.
We also have a Creecho dictionary online, so that helps a lot of people. If they don't know the wording, then they would search up on that dictionary and they would find the wording if they need it.
Yeah, and I think that just, you know, that even using the word thank you, like depending on what language you're using, whether it's Masicho or whatever it happens to be in your language in your area, you know, I think it just makes things a little bit more accessible and friendly and relevant to people. It pops out at them a little bit more. So I think that using local language is important. So thanks for sharing that. And then in the acronym CRISP, the P stands for photos and permissions. So use photos to get noticed, credit the photographer, respect license and copyright, and always get permission. Now, Amy, you said you're a freelance writer. Do you want to share anything with us about privacy and permissions and things? Like, you probably got no more than I do, so.
It's kind of like if somebody has agreed to an interview, then they're aware that whatever they say is going to be potentially part of the story that I'm writing. There's nothing signed or anything like that. It's just kind of a verbal agreement, like, are you free for this? Yes, I am. They understand that I'm taking notes and I'm recording it and I'm going to use whatever comes out of it in like online and in print and wherever.
So you don't have to get any like signed permission, or do you show them the story before it goes out or anything like that?
Not usually. If I was writing for like an organization, like I did some writing for ArtPay at the beginning of this year, and I think they shared the stories with the people they were about before they went ahead and did something with them. But for like a newspaper or a magazine, you don't let people look at it beforehand, not because you're trying to hide anything, but because people want to rewrite it their own way and sort of put the focus on the things that they think are important, which sometimes, like, subjectively to them, okay, this piece of your story is like significant to you, but it's not like I'm the objective person looking at the things and telling the story to a broader audience. And so, yeah, when you let people look at what you've written, it's not that it's that they want to edit out things that are untrue. It's that they want to be the one telling the story. And so then you kind of lose all objectivity if you allow that to happen.
Yeah, like they want to change it from own perspective, and you've written it from perspective, yeah.
Yeah.
Like telling the story through different lenses or something like that. So.
Yeah, like if I gave Dan Curtis a story about Dan Curtis before it went to press, he would just use it as a propaganda machine.
Yeah, right.
To serve whatever interest he has.
Yeah, and I mean, he might pay you to write a story about him, but that's a different thing, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's go back and think a little bit more generally about privacy in your promotional activities. So I know the Recreation Parks Association for the Yukon is pretty aware of making sure that there's permissions to go out with photos before they're used. About 6 years ago, we had a bit of a challenge. We created a community recreation leaders guide that was printed. We got permission from people to share their photos in it. And one of the photos was like a northern wedding photo with people being really active, so it's a really cool picture. Then we took that guide from the print version and put it online. And then for whatever reason, CBC had some story about something or other, and they just sort of went onto ArtPay's website, pulled that photo out, and stuck it onto theirs. And we got in a bit of trouble because they'd given permission to use it for the guide, not for CBC to grab it and use it. So there are some challenges when you put photos that belong to people or things that belong to people. It's just the same, Amy, I guess, if you wrote something and somebody else reposted it, you know, under their own name and didn't give credit to you or anything like that. So I just want to ask you guys, and we'll start, Justine, I'd like to, if it's okay, I'll start with you. We'll go Justine and then Amy and then Chelsea. I'm just wondering how or what considerations you have about privacy or how you ensure privacy in your promotional activities? That's a pretty big question. If you're not sure, that's okay. But if you have any thoughts about it and would like to share it, that would be great. So, Justine, any thoughts about privacy and sort of respecting that when you're doing social media?
So for privacy, it's just basically what I think is just being considerate of people in their personal space. So basically, what I would do is I would basically ask for permission to post them before posting, and I would like it to be through email so that if they were to ever come back at me or anything like that, then I would be able to let them know that they gave me permission to post on this website and it's what it's used for this specific program. We had an incident where there was one of our creature citizens who were taking training, and they told us that they did not want their photos taken. I mean, they did want their photos taken, but they did not want to get posted. And this was before I came in, and so I believe it was a miscommunication, and so they got confused and forgot who they meant. So after I got into my position, I made sure that we have consent forms, we have all these liability forms so that we don't get in trouble anymore.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that people understand how you're going to use your photo. Like, they might say, yeah, you can take my photo and you can put it in your printed newsletter, but I don't want it on social media.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely challenging. So lots to think about with that as far as privacy. Amy, how about yourself? Is privacy a concern from an elder active perspective with your seniors and elders, and how do you tackle that?
We've got photos at different events that we use for posters and social media and things like that, and usually anyone participating in any of our activities signs a waiver beforehand that includes that information, like that you'd be okay with having your photo shared as part of promotional material for Elder Active.
Awesome, thank you. And Kelsey, how about for you with our case?
Yeah, we're actually right now in the process of updating our photo release form because we are trying to do a video project, so we need to make sure that our release form covers video as well as photos. And then it's something that we run into quite often with our real leaders and our waffle leaders, where we request photos of their programming, but also make sure that they are aware that if it is a photo of a person and they need an up-to-date and signed photo release of that person so that photo can actually be used.
Great, thanks. So, yeah, so there's different challenges around the forms that you use and how you use it and what you're posting where and for what purposes, right? So, and, you know, it used to be a little cleaner when we didn't have social media, but now with social media, it's a lot more complicated. In all of our learning events, I add an explore more section. So that's a section for you to go into if you're interested digging into things a little deeper. And it's at the bottom of the page. So the first thing I have in there is titled using photos in your promotional activities. And when you click on that, it goes to, I can't remember what CIPPIC stands for, but it's FAQs about photography law. So you can read that and then you can click the link and look for more information. So, you know, that was probably, I spent quite a bit of time finding something that was probably one of the better ones I found. The other thing when you're doing promotions, whether it's sending newsletters, collecting email addresses for things like MailChimp and stuff like that, you need to be aware of Canada's anti-spam legislation. And typically nonprofits kind of think that they're exempt from that, but actually nonprofits aren't. So the link that I shared comes from Volunteer Alberta because I found there to be the best explanation about CASEL, which is Canada's anti-spam legislation. So if you're advertising anything that people could pay for, even your membership fees, then that's considered commercial and it falls under cannabis anti-spam legislation. So you might want to take a look at that as well, and the case law. And then the last thing I wanted to point out, if you're interested, the one at the very bottom, there's a webinar that's being offered by Recreation Manitoba. It's free. It's on October 26th, and I found the information out on the Bench, which is the Canadian Parks and Rec Association, but I put the link directly to how you can register. So it's the focus of the webinar is on learning ways to make content more interesting and easier to create, how to join the conversation online, and tips for a more effective, engaging social media presence. So I thought that that might be of interest to some of you as well. So that's in at the bottom. You can check that out as well. And then to wrap up this learning event, I can't believe we're second week already, you have a required learning activity due on Sunday, and then there's also a feedback form. And I really rely on the feedback for each learning event to think about if I need to make any changes the next time around. It also helps us with our evaluation, and evaluation, as you all know, is important to make sure that we keep getting support to delivering this. For the promotional tool, I'd really encourage you, Kelsey, you may have noticed my long response to you. I'd encourage you guys to ask each other questions, too. So, Kelsey, you got some really great explanation in the text that you wrote. What I'd like to see is what you wrote and explained. I'd like to see you find a way to reflect that in the tool you shared. So if you're kind of scratching your head and going, how do I do that, ask, you know, Justine's on the call, Amy's on the call, or post a message and say, does anyone have any ideas? You know, that sort of thing. And Amy and Justine, when you share your tools as well, feel free to ask other people, what do you think? I was trying to do this. Does my tool do that? Because that way you're going to get feedback from more people than just myself, and you'll really get a sense of, are you doing a good job of informing and motivating in your tool? Because it's a hard thing to do. I don't know if I ever get it right, but I know what I'm supposed to do, but doing it is difficult. So I'll just do a quick round and see if you have any questions about the rest of the learning event, if you need any help with anything, or any comments on how you found this learning event overall. So I'm going to go alphabetical order this time, so I'll start with Amy. Any questions, comments?
No, I'm good.
Okay, thanks. Justine, any questions, comments, final thoughts about promoting recreation, PM 101?
Not at the moment.
Awesome. Well, just feel free to ask. We're a small group, and I think everybody would jump in and give help if anyone needs a hand, and me too. So thank you. Kelsey, any questions, comments, final thoughts about PM 101 promoting recreation?
Not at the moment. I guess I was reading through your response back to me this morning and was working on it a bit, so we'll see what I can come up with.
Awesome. And feel free to try popping something in and asking for comments and then revising it again. It doesn't have to be, you know, we're not looking for perfect. We're looking for a good learning experience is really what we're looking for, and looking for feedback from everybody, not just myself. So feel free to ask. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, everybody. And, you know, tomorrow is our National Truth and Reconciliation Day. So I trust that you all have some time and space to reflect and think about, you know, where you're at and where we're going as a country, and what we can all do to play our part in truth and reconciliation. So all the best for tomorrow. And I will talk to you in the next learning event, well, online, but our next learning event starts. Let me just double check here. The next one in the advanced series, which I know Kelsey and Justine, you're both in that one, is Document to Manage Risk, and it starts on October 11th, so after Thanksgiving. So you can take, you know, this week or next week if you need it to wrap up this one, PM 101. So thank you very much. And we'll talk to you all soon. And Amy, I look forward to meeting you in person at the recreation gathering next week.
Me too.
Awesome. Okay, talk to you all soon. Take care.
Bye.
Have a good day. Have a great week.
Bye.
Bye.